live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. On location today, the latest on health and healing and a little more in depth on NAD. That's one of the most important anti-aging nutrients we can take into our system. Also today, following health and nutrition, an in-depth encapsulation, a review of what one citizen journalist, Helen Beninsky, has to say about Wikipedia, Jimmy Wales, and the skeptics. And I will add my own postscript onto it. And then a week from now, Richard Gale and I will present another in our series of articles because we believe it's time that the American and world public knew the truth about Wikipedia, its biases, its capacity for libel, slander, and the premeditated destruction of people's reputations. Up to this point, it's been able to do so with no consequences. In fact, it is mockingly disdainful of the idea that it should be held accountable. It's protected. Yes, it has been protected up till today. I believe that that's about to change. We're going to have that. You'll have an opportunity to call in after these presentations and share your points of view. Also, I have a clip on freedom of speech, and I was very disheartened to see that 1 in 3 college kids, according to Jonathan Turley, who I have a lot of respect for, he's one of the best constitutional attorneys in the world, he found that 1 in 3 college students believe violence is justified to stop hate speech. This was 800 full-time undergraduates from Yale University and others. So what then constitutes hate speech? How about any speech that someone disagrees with? That's what happens when you open the door to censoring speech, but going beyond censoring, which is already being done now, to where you feel that it's justified to commit an act of violence against someone who you disagree with what they're saying. That's where we're going. And I'll deal with that also today, if time permits. But we always begin with the latest on health and healing. And this is from the Medical University of South Carolina. And it was an important article because it deals with something that all of us experience in our life, and that is the diminishment of our mitochondria. Now, the mitochondria are responsible for supplying the cells with energy in the form of what is called ATP, adenosine triphosphate. And this is done through oxidative phosphorylation. Now, there's a group of rare autosomal recessive disorders known as mitochondrial DNA depletion syndrome, which causes a significant reduction in your mitochondrial DNA and ATP production. There's no treatment for this, and it's typically fatal, especially during infancy as a result of the liver failure. However, researchers at the Medical University of South Carolina have identified several drug candidates for the treatment of this. Their results published online in Cell Reports showed that mitochondria adenosine dinucleotide, NAD, significantly restored mitochondrial function in vitro as well as in the preclinical animal models. Think of the people suffering from Gulfour syndrome, chronic fatigue syndrome, Lyme's disease, cancer. All of them have something in common: a misfunction within their mitochondrial system. People with Alzheimer's, dementia, multiple sclerosis, they have dysfunctions, not just neurological, but also in the mitochondria of the brain. That's why they have difficulty thinking, part of the reason, and they don't remember things easily. They're not generally aware, fully aware, and cognitive of the environment they're in. They can walk into a room and not know why they're there. They have to stop for a moment and think. So the application of NAD could be extraordinarily important for these people. I've been using NAD for years, helping other people get back their energy. And this is just one more study. And there's a lot of studies having a capacity for NAD to help slow down, energize the mitochondria where you get your energy back. And it's especially important for athletes. From Florida State University, apple extracts increase excretion of cholesterol by up to 35% in healthy people. So this is one good way to keep your cholesterol in a normal range. Generally, you cannot bring it down that quickly. But in this case, simply stop eating fried foods, quit smoking, lose some weight, become more physically active, that will work. And it does. That takes time. But according to a study that was recently published in the Journal of Pharma Nutrition, it showed that a new nutraceutical, mainly polyphenolic extracts from apples, could serve as a natural way to manage cholesterol and support cardiovascular health by decreasing cholesterol solubility and absorption in the intestine. Most Americans have an elevated cholesterol level. And in this placebo-controlled trial, it was a double-blind, randomized crossover study of healthy women and men, and either they had the apple extract or they didn't, and there was a huge benefit. So, you've heard me say that an onion a day keeps a stroke away. Garlic each day, what would be about a bulb of garlic, helps lower your blood pressure. Onions, garlic together are phenomenal on thinning the blood, having antiviral and antimicrobial properties. But we've all heard of an apple a day keeps a doctor away. Well, it's because it's rich in quercetin. Onions and apples are two of your best sources of quercetin. And quercetin is what helps to thin the blood. That helps prevent a stroke. It also helps where you have bruising, as a lot of people do in varicosities and spider veins. Helps with that is anti-cancer. And it's antiviral. So the researchers at Florida State University did the research and they found that just the simple process of eating apples was able to lower the bad cholesterol, the LDL, by over 23%. That is good, plus the good HDL increased also. So one more reason to have apples. Also from McMaster University, which is in Toronto, Canada, you can prevent muscle mass aging by taking more plant-based proteins. Now, there's always been this confusion, and the confusion is really artificially manufactured. It goes back to the idea that we have to have animal proteins three times a day, and this was so well orchestrated by the egg industry, the dairy industry, the chicken industry, the fish industry, the meat industry, the pork industry, the beef, that people went out of their way to make sure that they had plenty of protein each day. What no one knew was that there was no science to back that up. In point of fact, having all these animal proteins actually increases the diseases of the kidney, the liver, and increase our risk of breast cancer, colon cancer, prostate cancer, uterine cancer, constipation, and itises, ileitis, colitis, gastroenteritis. So I remember I was in dietetic school, and I had a professor who was absolutely certain to the textbook we were using, Normal and Therapeutic Nutrition by Robinson, that said that only animal proteins contain the 8 essential amino acids, a 9th for pregnant women, and that you never had to worry about getting your protein as long as you had animal proteins 3 times a day, and hence the diet should be always give them milk 3 times a day, that's why they're getting their calcium, give them eggs in the morning, because the egg is the most perfect form of protein, it has the highest net protein utilization, meaning the protein in an egg is better utilized than any other protein on earth. And so I questioned them. I said, what about tribes around the world that do not have any or very rarely have any animal proteins, and yet they are living longer, healthier, and don't have any of our major diseases? Well, he didn't like being asked questions in class. I think on 5 separate occasions, he told me to go down to the office and speak with the administrator. Why was I in this class? I said, I'm here to see if there's anything that I can learn beyond what I already know. And thus far, the answer is no. I'm hearing propaganda, but I'm not hearing the kind of insights and acceptable challenges. And it was about 5 years after that, after I graduated, and it was appalling. Part of becoming a registered dietitian is you have to do anywhere from 900 to 1,200 hours postgraduate, and you had to have courses in nutritional biochemistry, inorganic chemistry, organic chemistry, physiology, anatomy, etc. And you have to work in an institution, generally under a physician who dictates what the diet should be. Then you have to put it all together. And the simple way was just give them lots of oil, lots of sugar. You'll get the calories up. So when I suggested that the calories coming from an apple and an equal amount of glucose coming from, or fructose coming from, refined sugars were not the same. The body didn't utilize them the same. Again, there's this disdain. Well, it turns out they were wrong. In 1 year, I sent the results of a study that showed that 55,000 people died of malnutrition that they didn't have when they went in the hospital, and I sent that to every one of the instructors, including the president and dean of the school, showing that what they were teaching was just not accurate. And then I went about, and this actually wasn't to prove that plant proteins had benefit. I was just curious as to why people living at that point in South America, and from my travels there, Venezuela and Brazil, etc., why they were living long lives. And the poor people couldn't afford meat, and they had almost all their proteins coming from gourds, legumes, beans, and grains. So what I did was, I did a simple analysis on beans and rice, and I thought I'd made an error. In fact, I asked Dr. Berman, who worked the shift after me, I said, I made an error here. Could you redo the test so I can see where my error was? I came in the next day, and he left a note saying, no error, it's accurate. And I said, no, it can't be, because every textbook in the world, every single textbook that deals with nutrition says that only animal proteins are complete, containing all 8 essential amino acids. Others are incomplete. Fruit and vegetables are very incomplete. So for a week, he and I went back and forth, each doing the study, and every single result came out the same. So one day, I was left with this idea to ponder. I'd like for you to think about this just for a moment. I went over to the director of the institute early in the morning because he got up early and he did, his hobby was sketching. So I would go by and tell him the results I had done the night before. And I said, I'm caught with a conundrum situation. He said, what's that? I said, every textbook, every dietitian, every nutritionist, every physician, every scientist is living with an absolutism that only animal proteins contain the 8 essential amino acids, but my research and Dr. Berman show that that's not true, that all grains and legumes, I'd only tested grains and legumes, contain all 8 essential amino acids. He said, first thing you have to do is disprove yourself. Okay, take some time and show that you're wrong. And I said, all right, so I went back and I disproved myself, but I couldn't, no matter what I did. So I got Dr. Hillard Fiske and I asked him to do it and some other people I knew, and it all came back that it's accurate. Now imagine you're accurate, you're correct, and everyone, I mean everyone, nurses, doctors, dietitians, nutritionists, scientists, everyone in the world is wrong, except the people who've been living in indigenous ways for thousands of years, who are right. Once again, reality superseded scientific validation or verification. So I went ahead over the next nearly 2 years and tested every food, every herb, every fruit, vegetable, legume, tuber, all contain all 8 essential amino acids. And that led me to the belief that we never again in our lives ever have to have any protein from an animal. Therefore, we should never raise or kill anything with a heartbeat or a face in order to supply us with something we do not need. Also, then I looked at the economics of how much do we spend on animal husbandry, not including all the things that we spend in common, like the subsidies to the farm industry and the roads that their trucks travel on that we paid for. And it's like 10 to 1. And I did analysis. To raise a potato requires about 80 gallons of water. To raise the amount of beef to get 1/4-pound hamburgers, 3,000 plus gallons of water. So the difference in what it costs us ecologically is huge, the carbon footprint. And then I took almost 3 years to look at all the science on how many diseases are known to be caused by the diet, especially the diet with animal proteins, and it was substantial. And how many studies exist in the peer-reviewed literature to show that eating these animal proteins extends our life or makes your heart healthier, colon healthier, less susceptible to prostate and breast cancer? None. Just the opposite. So think about this for a moment. Think of the problem I faced. On the one hand, you have a $300+ billion a year industry in animal proteins. On the other side, you have a leading cause of many diseases, animal proteins. Also in physiology, protein can't be stored in the body. So whatever you don't use, your body has to go through a very challenging process of deaminization. You have to break that down. That creates urea and ammonium, which are toxic to the liver and kidneys and heart. And you're despoiling the soil. It's a major polluter, pig farms, chicken farms, etc. And it disrespects sentient life, the creatures. Now, if you ask someone to come over for dinner and you were going to serve up dog and cat, they'd freak out. But if you were serving up chicken and fish, that's fine. Lamb and veal, that's fine. All right? Pork and slice of cheese, no problem there. They look forward to that. But in different parts of the world, they eat animals that we consider pets. So how is it that our minds have not evolved to the level that we can accept that a dog and cat are sentient creatures, but a cow or a horse are not? So this is the level of denialism that we live in. Selective denialism. So I saw that I had a big problem, and I submitted the research for peer review. I sent copies to the Harvard and MIT schools of nutrition, to the USDA, because after all, if my work held up to scrutiny, it would mean that we could deconstruct the entire food chain supply and save millions of lives worldwide in the process. Because all the benefit of the Mediterranean diet, the Greek diet, the Okinawa diet, the Hunza diet, these are all based principally upon plants and nuts and seeds. All the science validates that. Over 1,000 quality studies, including the nurse's study and the doctor's study that's been going on at Harvard and Brigham and Young University Hospital for decades. So you have science on your side, you have truth on your side, you have dietetic principles on your side, but what you have against you is no one's going to give up on the making the money, no one's going to give up on the standard of their lifestyle, no one's going to give up on their diet until a crisis, heart attack, stroke, or something. But until that time, the number of vegans in America stayed relatively the same and dipped down. This year, for example, we consume more meat than ever before in our history, more sugar than ever before in our history. And, of course, we have more disease than ever before in our history, including non-alcoholic liver disease. It took 12 years and over 7,000 submissions before a peer-reviewed journal picked up and published an article. 12 years. And yet not a single institution that I sent it to ever acknowledged that this was a major, original, paradigm-shifting discovery. So the idea that if you come up with something new and improved in medicine, public health, or anything, that people will pay attention and say, hey, good job, let's go for it. Just the opposite is true. Just the opposite. Because of all the special interest and all the people who feel, if I'm right and they're wrong, how's that going to look? So they'll do anything they can to attack, to destroy. Just want to share that because this, one of the things I noticed is that when I started advocating vegetable-based proteins to people who were over the age of 40, one of the first feedbacks I got was, gee whiz, I'm noticing that I'm getting some muscle where I'd had flab or crepey skin. And the older a person got, the more important that muscle became. And yet we were told just the opposite in dietetic school. The older you get, the less protein you give someone. God, were they wrong. Just the completely ass backwards on everything. Giving the minimal daily requirement instead of the maximum amount a person needs. So in any case, here we are. You'd never know that this study occurred. You'd never know that we don't ever have to eat animal proteins again. And the people most likely to be angry at you if this discovery are the people who don't want to change their habits. So now at least you know the truth, that as your muscles get smaller and weaker every year that passes, understand that what can help reverse muscle skeletal mass in your aging process is have more plant-based protein. It's that simple. Now, that's all the time I have today for this. We're 22 minutes in the program. Tomorrow, I'm going to talk about a new study on stroke survivors and those at risk urged to focus on two therapies that can help them. And that's important. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay with us. A special hello to all of you listening throughout the world. We're carried in almost every country of the world and stations around the United States. And people listen live Monday to Friday. Also Tuesday evenings. And by the way, we got such a tremendous positive feedback from Danny Sheehan's discussion. What a deep thinking individual. Wow. Andrew Harvey and him are running side by side in two of the best ethicists and philosophers and spiritual advisors on the planet. So because so many people in the audience would like to hear Danny, who do not have access to the internet, I'll be playing his program from the Progressive Commentary Hour this coming Friday on our sister stations around the country, including WBAI. It's a deep, deep discussion. I mean, you got to put your thinking hat on and listen carefully, because I think I asked him one question and he just ran 53 minutes. And not a wasted second. One of the best minds ever. That'll be this Friday for many of you. We also do more original in-depth investigative reporting than any other radio show in American history. Today we're continuing. This one is from citizen activist journalist feminist Helen Buniski, B-U-Y-N-I-S-K-I. We reviewed her research and queried her on everything before I would agree to share her information. I also have stated, and I will continue to state, that any of you who are citizen journalists who do not have forums, if you can show that the research you are doing is accurate, objective, and fair, we will be happy to provide you with a forum, because we have a massive forum. And we have a lot of policymakers and opinion leaders listen to this program. You can send your proposals to prnstudio@gmail.com. I'm also funding a program to educate, to teach, and then to get cameras, video cameras, high-quality ones, for people to do special assignments around the world. So, now to I accuse, and this is from, of course, the Dreyfus Affair and the single journalist who chose to look for the truth and not the body politic in France. So Helen is accusing Wikipedia. Wikipedia is one of the most popular websites in the world. We would all agree with that. It's free. That's good. It's educational. And it's democratic. What's not to like, right? The average user has no reason to think the material it publishes is anything but true. And it has become the go-to authority for anyone looking to quickly educate themselves on a topic. Qualifications and expertise are beside the point. This is an open-source repository of all human knowledge. And surely the cream rises to the top. If information is wrong, we're absolutely confident that editors are standing by to correct the record. But, as Andrew Lewis said, quote, if you're not paying for something, you're not the customer. You're the product being sold, end quote. This in-depth investigation has found that everything we've been led to believe about Wikipedia is a lie. Wikipedia serves as a warning that if something sounds too good to be true, it isn't true. Scratch the surface of the, quote, free encyclopedia anyone can edit, and you find a finely honed propaganda machine manipulated by experts and used to destroy the reputations of those who dare question the status quo. The casual user sees the edit button next to an entry and assumes all users can make changes on an equal footing. In reality, many areas of the encyclopedia are tightly controlled by ruling cliques operating with the blessing of Jimmy Wales, the co-founder and self-styled, quote, benevolent dictator. I'll repeat that. Jimmy Wales is the self-styled benevolent dictator of Wikipedia. Wonder what would happen if anyone in politics called themselves benevolent dictators. The experience of trying to connect information about oneself on Wikipedia is akin to being trapped in a Kafka novel, enclosed by an impenetrable thicket of unevenly enforced rules, subject to the whims of powerful groups that officially do not exist, helpless to stop millions of Wikipedia users from happening across false and even libelous information about yourself or your work. For those trapped in Wikipedia's internet gulag, there is no escape, not even deletion. Wikipedia's Wells gloats does not believe in the right to be forgotten. But, Jimbo, what if a person is innocent? What if a person has never gone to Wikipedia, but someone who doesn't like them puts an edit up on them, and then countless people could add to that edit? What is their expertise about that person? Do they know them? Do they know their work? You don't have to be an expert in anything to be perceived as an expert, because whoever edits the material almost always anonymous, it is assumed that they're an expert. Show me the proof. We have not been able to find that proof. And while Wells has said he considers his role akin to that of a constitutional monarch, largely ceremonial and ultimately all but powerless, he has the ability to override the actions of any other user and has deployed these godlike powers to shape the narrative. Favoritism, rules enforced unevenly, pay-for-play editing, ideological hit squads, hundreds of factions conspiring to various degrees of secrecy to game the system. All this goes on with Wells's blessing. The Wikimedia Foundation has violated its charter, we believe, as a nonprofit and stripped itself of the immunity conferred by Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act by involving itself editorially in the contents it hosts, by choosing which editors are allowed a platform, and by choosing when and where to enforce its rules. But I want to make this very clear, especially for the attorneys in this audience or those who are concerned about social justice issues. Let me repeat this so you're very aware. Up to this moment, virtually all of the editors and the managers and the directors, the entire cacophony of people involved have assumed that they could do anything they want, write any libelous statement they want, be as inaccurate about a person, living personality they want, with impunity, mock, give the finger to that person in the public. And they were probably correct because no one took the time or the scholarship to look for the truth. That's changed. So just remember, it is our opinion that the Wikimedia Foundation has violated its charter as a nonprofit and stripped itself of the immunity conferred by Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act by involving itself editorially in the contents it hosts. So, let's see how that plays out. Now let's go to the IAQs. Jimmy Wells did not create Wikipedia, though he has edited his biography more than half a dozen times to give the impression that he did. Larry Sanger, whom Wells attempted to airbrush out of history, left Wikipedia in disgust soon after its launch. Quote, Wikipedia never solved the problem of how to organize itself in a way that didn't lead to mob rule. On the one hand, it isn't a mob at all. It's highly organized and structured, and there's a lot of rules. But on the other hand, the way that the community is organized isn't codified or decided upon in any type of constitutional way. So there might be some people who selectively apply rules according to positions that others take on their pet issues. And that's inherently unfair. End quote. In effect, it is our belief that the inmates have taken over the asylum, and they are running it with the blessings of Jimmy Wells himself. Wells may not have founded Wikipedia, but as its public face, he has influenced the character of the site more than anyone else. It is his face users see during fundraising campaigns to bring in far more cash than the site requires to operate. $89 million last year, fueling the growth of an unaccountable bureaucracy, top secret projects hidden from the Wikipedia rank and file, and an increasingly detached sense of responsibility for the very real harms caused by its contents. Wikipedia has allowed itself to be weaponized, in our opinion, to do the dirty work of the ruling class, and anyone that deviates from the establishment line is fair game to be smeared, attacked, and destroyed. Was that what the law was meant to do, to allow this to happen? I think not. Wikipedia's elite operate in secrecy. In general, the more a user or group on Wikipedia protests that there is no, quote, cabal of powerful editors running the show, the more likely they are to be the members of it. Wells himself joked about forming a, quote, cabal, end quote, to enforce policy back in September 2001 when the site was just getting off the ground. His ideas became the arbitration committee, which some have likened to Wikipedia's, quote, Supreme Court, skilled in navigating the dense thicket of rules that has grown up around Wikipedia, and hundreds of administrators who form the next layer of bureaucracy are able to control what remains on the encyclopedia and what or who is deleted. If these powers were wielded fairly, their influence would be welcome. But the rules are instead used as a hammer to enforce ideological conformity. Wikipedia isn't just dismissive of expertise. It's actively hostile to experts. While one of the site's many policies discourages editors from removing something just because they dislike it, Wells and the ruling cadre have made an exception for themselves. From the beginning, Jimmy Wells surrounded himself with a cadre of admirers willing to do his bidding, editing his biography when his own self-editing was exposed, or attacking his enemies when they asked difficult questions on his talk page. And these people for hire became Wikipedia's ruling class, shaping narratives made to order and serving them up as more real than reality. But there is abuse of the nonprofit status. The Internal Revenue Service forbids 501c3 organizations like the Wikimedia Foundation from participating in political campaigns, quote, on behalf of or in opposition to any candidates for elected public office. A ban which extends to, quote, contributions to political campaign funds or public statements of position, verbal or written, made on behalf of the organization in favor of or in opposition to any candidate for public office, end quote. IRS policy clearly states that, quote, violating this prohibition may result in denial or revocation of tax-exempt status and the imposition of certain excise taxes, end quote. The policy further explains that, quote, voter education or registration activities with evidence of bias that A, would favor one candidate over another, or B, oppose a candidate in some manner, or C, have the effect of favoring a candidate or group of candidates will constitute prohibited participation or intervention, end quote. That is not known to most people, but that is the law. We have verified and checked that. The Wikimedia Foundation has dipped its toe into political waters on several occasions. Management is aware of the perils of getting politically involved. One of the first major Wikipedia scandals broke in February 2006 when it was discovered that U.S. congressional staff were scrubbing the biographies of their politicians, removing broken campaign promises and scandals and other undesirable details and adding glowing tributes and favorable information. At the same time, negative information was appended to the biographies of their opponents, and some ambitious staffers were replacing their candidates' biographies wholesale with staff-authored versions. Wikipedia responded initially by banning congressional IP addresses, lest the site appear to be complicit in the political self-promotion which would have torpedoed their nonprofit status. When Google search results returned Nazism as the ideology of the California Republican Party just a week before that state's primaries earlier this year, Google blamed Wikipedia, explaining that the Google, quote, knowledge box that contained the offending term is often populated with Wikipedia text. The, quote, vandalism had remained on the party's Wikipedia page for 6 days before it was corrected, hidden in a piped link where the link text and the alt text read differently. Meanwhile, other edits were reverted within a few minutes, suggesting this one was allowed to persist, deliberately hidden so it would openly appear in Google search results. Whether or not it was deliberate, it is not the first time Wikipedia has appeared to promote the neoliberal wing of the Democratic Party. Such apparent political bias makes more sense in light of the fact that Wikimedia Foundation contracted the Mnuchinian group run by Clinton Foundation Chief Communications Officer Craig Mnuchin to train Wikipedia's own C-level employees and directors and managers in media strategy for the year 2014-15. Mnuchin was further tasked with conducting, quote, a communications audit of the 2016 election. Some editors among the Wikipedia rank and file were unhappy about having their territory politicized, particularly given how much of Wikipedia's money was going to Mnuchin. $436,104 2015, $406,597 2016. And while the details of Mnuchin's activities are not public, the group did issue a report detailing its audit findings, which primarily consisted of parsing media coverage by subject, county, country, publication, and author, and ranking outlets in terms of prestige. Wikipedia was advised to focus on portraying itself as trustworthy and neutral in the media, even while it, quote, was seeking out and dispelling controversial issues. The audit recommendation was to concentrate on building a rapport with, quote, friendly journalists, writing on for what Wikipedia editors would call, quote, reliable sources. Mnuchin had a history of planting stories favorable to the Clinton Foundation in, quote, friendly media, as Wikipedia revealed in its Podesta email dump, which included a message from Craig Mnuchin himself boasting a favorable coverage he had secured for the foundation on the Colbert report. Wikipedia editor Sashi Rawls liked the Mnuchin hire to the arrival of a crew of military editors on the Clinton Foundation article, who kept it scrupulously clean of any mention of the billions of dollars the foundation took in from victims of the Haitian earthquake, but never distributed to victims, opting to construct a lucrative industrial park in an undamaged area of the island itself. Clinton's own Wikipedia article is similarly spotless, bearing only a sanitized summary of her, quote, email controversy, and no mention at all of the revelations from WikiLeaks and the DNC and personal email document dumps. No mention is made of the invasion of Libya on false flag premises and pretenses, or the fallout from that invasion. Indeed, reality is directly contradicted with a mystifying sentence reading, quote, there was a trend of women around the world finding more opportunities and in some cases feeling safer as a result of Clinton's actions and visibility, end quote. Sourced to a book called The Hillary Doctrine, the article was, quote, protected, meaning frozen, so that only high-level administrators can make a change, and includes the option to listen to it as audio, indicating it will stay frozen in that state. The efforts of a clique of ideologically motivated editors to whitewash political entries are of particular interest given the deployment of such teams on the other social media sites like Facebook, Reddit, Instagram, and Twitters during the 2016 election. Clinton strategist and fundraiser David Brock, Correct the Record, super PAC spent at least $1 million during the election to, quote, push back against negative posts about Clinton as part of a program called, quote, Barrier Breakers. And it's unlikely that such an operation would have overlooked Wikipedia, which other social media sites often use as a fact-checking tool. Brock has come under scrutiny before for bending campaign finance rules. Super PAC AC aren't supposed to participate in individual elections. And Media Matters of America, the organization for which he is best known, is a 501c3 and therefore barred from conducting politically active roles on behalf of any candidate. Much like Wikimedia, a former CTR contractor estimates the group's expenditures at $5 to $6 million as of August 2016 in a post on 4chan in which he encourages others to sign up for easy cash, explaining that CTR employees were given high-ranked and backdated accounts on Reddit and Twitter so as to more easily blend into the discussion. Infiltrating Wikipedia is even easier. Editors can change usernames and sometimes choose to leave their history with a previous username behind, especially if it was associated with disciplinary sanctions, as ideologically motivated editors often are. Any Wikipedia editor who attempts to look into this sort of infiltration can find themselves indefinitely banned from the site, as Saoirse Rolls found when he tried to blow the whistle on Sage Kander, an editor who racked up hundreds of edits on articles related to Clinton's 2016 campaign around the time of the election. 904 edits to, quote, false news websites. 631 edits to, quote, Russian interference in the 2016 election. Sage Kander implying that Saoirse Rolls was part of a Kremlin disinformation campaign had him hauled before Wikipedia's disciplinary committee, where he was accused of, quote, wiki hounding and then indefinitely vindicating Saoirse Rolls, but too late as he remains banned. Charitable organizations like Wikimedia are also barred from operating for the benefit of, quote, private interests, with no part of a group's net earnings accruing to, quote, the benefit of any private shareholder or individual. Yet Jimmy Wales used his Wikimedia credit card so much that he was relieved of it in 2006, after it was revealed that he was billing $1,300 steak dinners and other outsized expenses to, quote, the charity. At one point, he was on the hook for $30,000 in expenses billed to the foundation for which he could not show receipts. He reportedly reached an agreement with the foundation's lawyer to pay less than a third of that. More recently, Wells took the results of Minyasin's audit, which the Wikimedia Foundation paid for, and used it as the business plan for Wiki Tribune, pitched as a scrupulously neutral news platform helmed by friendly journalists and supported by an army of volunteer editors and fact-checkers. The professional journalists would be funded by reader subscriptions, while the volunteers would operate much in the manner of Wikipedia itself. Wiki Tribune's mission? To combat fake news. In 2011, the XKCD web comic coined the term, quote, pseudogenesis, to describe the process by which a piece of non-factual information is written into Wikipedia, used in stories by, quote, real journalists with poor research hygiene, and then recited in the original Wikipedia article using the reliable source that found the information on Wikipedia. It's impossible to calculate how common a phenomenon this is, but in January 2015, an ARBCOM churned through a complex disciplinary case involving dozens of editors on both sides of the Gamegate controversy. The Guardian, on whose board Jimmy Wells sat until 2017, reported the proceedings had ended in a ban on five feminist editors. The story fit the prevailing media narrative concerning Gamegate, that the internet was full of sexism and misogyny, that some form of online affirmation action was needed to increase female representation in gaming, coding, even Wikipedia, and numerous other outlets reposted The Guardian's story without fact-checking it. At least one Wikipedia editor emailed the original author to no avail. With all these so-called reliable source discussions, the results of the Gamegate Arb Commission case at Wikipedia on deaf ears, certainly there was no reliable sources claiming the case hadn't been closed. Wikipedia is not a reliable source, even about itself. Like a similar case in which author Philip Roth was told he was not a reliable source for information about his own books. We're talking about the famous Philip Roth. The Gamegate affair laid bare the absurdity of Wikipedia's policy on reliable sources. Now think of that for a moment. Think about this. You're one of the world's most famous authors. You've had multiple New York Times bestsellers, as Philip Roth has. And yet Wikipedia says you're not a reliable source on yourself. Really? Well, if you're not a reliable source on yourself, who is? A total stranger? Yeah. This is the absurdity. This is the clownishness. This is the disgust that many people find when you start digging for the truth in Wikipedia. And yet Wells envisioned the Wikipedia model as the answer to so-called fake news and told any interviewer who would listen that Wiki Tribune would save the endangered fact. Okay, Mr. Wells, let's say that you are condemning, which your editors have, the skeptics, chiropractic, homeopathy, traditional Chinese medicine, all alternative medicine, body-mind medicine, meditation, supplementation. All this is denigrated and condemned as quackery. You're dealing with over 100,000 therapists, all of whom have background. Many of the physicians are board certified from our finest schools. They have published in peer-reviewed literature, and they are supported by hundreds of thousands of studies published in the Library of Medicine. So what I'm understanding, if I'm understanding correctly, is that these people, their background, their clinical experience, helping patients, this is immaterial. Some person with no medical scientific activist or investigative background decides he wants to edit something and discourage people from even thinking that it's legitimate, let alone trying it. And that person has more credibility with no hesitancy, given the complete opportunity to destroy over 100,000 people's reputations and tens of millions of people's opportunity. That's a heavy responsibility to take upon yourself. But you have, as have your critics. The Wikimedia Foundation already has a new subsidiary, Wikinews, that boasts few users but operates within the strictures of the nonprofit. For Wells to title his new venture Wiki Tribune suggests he deliberately sought to capitalize on the brand confusion engendered by the name. Last month, Wiki Tribune announced it was switching to an all-volunteer model, bringing the company even closer to direct competition with Wikinews in a way that is at least unethical, if not illegal. Wells is both a trustee of the Wikimedia Foundation, of which Wikinews is a subsidiary, and CEO of Wiki Tribune. And it's also worth asking, what will happen to subscribers' donations now that Wiki Tribune is switching to a volunteer-only model? Now that readers are not paying writers' salaries, they cannot expect to have any say in what topics are covered, even though this is an initial selling point in Wiki Tribune subscription. So I'm looking at the clock and we're running out of time, and I'm only one-third through this report. The The report will be published and posted online, and it's called I Accused. But just imagine this. Imagine that you have your reputation posted by a known enemy on Wikipedia, and every effort you make to have it corrected or taken off, they choose to keep you there as if they have become judge and jury and executioner of your reputation. And this has happened to so many people. In our next article, Richard Gale and I will lay out all the different people who are in these gulags. They cannot remove their name. So let's say you're Deepak Chopra. He's one, as an example. And you've spent your lifetime trying to give people insights into spiritual issues, meditation, transcendental meditation. And if you want to debate him, that's fine. Debate him. But what if you try to destroy his reputation? And his agent says, we tried several publishers and we cannot find anyone who wants to take you on right now because of your reputation on Wikipedia. Do you take responsibility for what you've done to someone? And who was it who found that he deserved to be there? What was their motivation? Who are these people? What is their background? What is their expertise? Oh, we're not allowed to know any of the above. Now you begin to see why everything about Wikipedia should be challenged. And we are. We're challenging a lot. And I think this is around our 14th article that you'll be seeing. And we have a lot more to go. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.